Gone. Randilla.
Judy.
Hey, Judy, how's it going?
Okay. How are you?
I'm okay too.
Good.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening.
I hope everybody's having a good evening. Please join me in saying the anaphora. Anabekoa. We're going to use the sequence Yud Kaf Shin to take any part of our body that needs healing back to its stem cell state. And then after it has been rejuvenated and healed, restored, we're going to bring it back to the body where it will now activate and act like it has in the past, doing its job perfectly. Bahem takarem rahame sitaka sami namem etetresh saritaf yamo kasin tadot sirov tukha dae The letters of the month of Tishrei, the Pei, that created the planet Noga, the planet Venus, and the Lamed that created the constellation Virgo, Mosnaim, which is the Libra, not Virgo. Yachid Gaye Lamcha Pene Dore Du Shata Yud Gimel Lamed Pei Zayin Kuf Shavatenu Kabel Shma Tziaka Tenu Dore Alut Kufav Bavi Yuta. We're now going to read the verse from Samuel Bet. V'sam t'imakom le'amim le'yisrael u'tah t'imshah And I will appoint a place for my people Israel, and will plant them, that they may dwell in a place of their own, and be moved no more. Neither shall the children of wickedness afflict them any more, as at first. I'm now going to read from the Zohar, from the Parsha of Noah. I'm reading from section 36. And the sons of Noah that went forth from the ark. It's an interesting question that most people don't ask. I'm going to read the next verse in English so that you have the answer. Otherwise, you'd be frustrated for a while. Rabbi Abba answered, yes, his sons bore other children afterward, as it is written, these are the generations of Shem. They did not go forth from the ark, and it is therefore written that went forth from the ark were Shem, Ham, and Japheth. What this teaches us is how accurate and exact the language of the Torah is. We know that the three sons went into the ark. Were there more? No. But when he's describing the sons, the children of Noah, he's talking about the descendants. So he's talking about the three sons who exited the ark and the children that they had after the ark landed. How would you describe that in the fewest number of letters? And the answer is the way the Torah describes it. The sons of Noah who went forth from the ark. If we tried to say the sons of Noah and their descendants, it would take more letters. And the Torah always does things in the least amount of words and the least amount of letters. Does anybody have any questions? We are reading from the Advanced Reincarnation series of classes. We're reading from class number 29. And you can find that handout on the Revealed Wisdom page on the 11th row and the second column from the left. And if you then scroll down to class number 29 to the handout, we are starting with Fathers and Teachers, Chapter 10, Section 1. The father gives a portion of his soul to the son, And the teacher gives part of his spirit to the students. Hanok's commentary. Note the difference between soul and spirit. Spirit refers to Ruach, and soul refers to the Nefesh. It makes no difference if a man marries his soulmate or if he takes another woman who is not his soulmate. He can father children that are sparks of souls from his own root or souls from a different root. The father gives a portion of his soul to his children. The mother also gives a portion to her children, but her role in reincarnation is not as relevant as that of the father. And you get the same information from modern science today when you deal with DNA, because the father's DNA is measured or exact, whereas the mother's DNA is in a different level, and the information is not as clear. At least this is what science is indicating. They don't interpret it to the way this statement was made, of course. This portion becomes an exterior garment to the soul of the son. This portion refers to the portion that the mother gives to the child. My commentary. In this chapter, there is a change in the commentator, even though it is not publicized. You can tell by the change in nomenclature. This commentary, in my opinion, will confuse you. I am going to attempt to clarify the commentary at the end of the section. Please ignore this commentary as we read it, and wait for the commentary at the end of the section. Please write your questions down, and then determine if we need to answer those questions after my commentary at the end of the section. According to the Kabbalah, everything in creation has two aspects, light and vessel. When we are talking about humans, for example, these two aspects are called body and soul. When we are talking about Partsufim, the aspect of light is usually called Mochin, meaning brains. But here we are going to also use the original term light. Actually, the light itself has three aspects: light, mochin, and selamim, images. But these details do not concern us here. Although everything has these two aspects of light and vessel, there is another third aspect which lies intermediate between the light and the vessel. It is called the levush, or the garment, because it is an external garment to the light. This garment is interior to the vessels which comprise the limbs of the partsuf. But it is called levush because it is the garment of the light and the brains, the mochin. It covers them and dims them to eliminate the possibility that the vessels might break because of the great magnitude of light entering into them. The levush, or the garment, is actually the netzach, hod, and yesod of the higher partsuf. For example, let us say that the lower partsuf is their unpin. We will call the higher partsuf ima. But in the realm of the soul, this description applies to the relationship of father and son, as well. The light of Ima that is within its three lower sephirot, Netzach, Hod, and Yesod, ascends upward into its own Tiferet, leaving the vessels of Netzach, Hod, and Yesod empty. Then the light or the Mohin that is being transmitted to Zeranpin from above, through Ima, enters into the vessels of Netzach, Hod, and Yesod of Ima. The vessels of Netzach, Hod, and Yesod of Ima become the garment for the light of Zeranpin. And in that configuration, they enter into the vessels of Zeranpin. Afterwards, Ima grows new Netzach, Hod, and Yesod for her own light of Netzach, Hod, and Yesod. The Chabad of the light of Zeranpin enters into the Chabad of the vessels of Zeranpin. The Chagat, which is Chesed, Gevurah, and Tiferet, of the light of Zeranpin, enters into the Chesed, Gevurah, and Tiferet of the vessels of Zeranpin. The Netzach, Hod, and Yesod of the light of Zeranpin enters into the Netzach, Hod, and Yesod of the vessels of Zeranpin. However, the garment of the light of Zeranpin, which is the Netzach, Hod, and Yesod of Ima, is always situated between the light and the vessels. Each of the Nefesh, Ruach, and Neshama has five partsufim, and each partsuf consists of 613 limbs. In our text, the Arizal wrote, "The Father gives a portion of his soul to his children, and this portion becomes an exterior garment to the soul of the Son. The portion that was part of the Father's soul is the Netzach, Hod, and Yesod of the Father's soul. It becomes a garment for the soul of the Son. This portion that becomes an exterior garment to the soul of the Son helps him and guides him down the proper path. For this reason, a son is obligated to honor his father. The father gives up a part of himself for the sake of his son. Therefore, the son is obligated to honor the father." My commentary. There are many reasons for the mitzvah and Eser Dibrot of honoring the father. The commentator is giving one explanation here, but it is not fully explained. The purpose of the father giving a part of himself is to protect the soul of the child from being overwhelmed by the light from the higher level. This is the implication for what happened in the world of points, and in the Torah's words, Tohu Vavohu. When the son realizes that the father has donated parts of himself to protect him, he needs to implement the consciousness of appreciation when he does actions to honor his father. However, if there is less than 500 levels difference between the soul of the father and that of the son, then the portion of the father's soul will remain with the sons even in the time of Mashiach. We have already learned that each of the Nefesh, Ruach, and Neshama has five partsufim, and each partsuf consists of 613 limbs. These are called major roots. Now, it will be explained with the help of God in Gate of Reincarnation 11.2 that each one of these limbs or major roots has 600,000 branches that are called minor roots. Each spark is a whole soul in itself that must enter the world in Gilgul in reincarnation, each one in its time, in order to achieve correction. In addition, each one of the 613 major roots consists of 613 sparks. These are called major sparks, and they may divide into 600,000 minor sparks, according to need. Thus, there is a maximum of 613 times 600,000 minor sparks in each and every part soup. This number, by the way, is 367.8 million. Each spark is a whole soul in itself that must enter the world in reincarnation, each one in its time, in order to achieve tikkun. Thus, each one of the roots and sparks of each partsu have a place or a level in the general hierarchy of souls. The levels of two different souls may be close to each other in this hierarchy, or far apart. If the distance between them is more than 500 levels, then the portion of the Father's soul given to the Son will remain with the Son's soul, even in the time of Mashiach. Nevertheless, in the time of the resurrection of the dead, or in the world that is coming, everything returns back to its root. They will separate completely. If there is less than 500 levels difference between the soul of the Father and that of the Son, they will remain together even in the time of Mashiach. However, in the time of the resurrection of the dead, or in the world that is coming, when everything returns back to its root, they will separate completely. On the other hand, if there is a difference between them of 500 levels, or more than 500 levels, then the lesser will be nullified within the greater. They will permanently unite forever, and they will never separate. The two of them will become one root. This is in regards of a father with a son. A teacher gives some of his spirit to his student. Regarding the teacher and his student, we have already explained that a teacher gives some of his spirit to his student, like a father does to a son. This does not refer to the Ruach, often translated as spirit. That is one of the Nefesh, Ruach, and Neshama. Rather, it refers to a minor Ruach. In effect, the Arizal does not consider the information transmitted by the teacher to the student as mere ethereal, non-entity. Rather, it is something that is real, that has it has content and substance, and it endures forever. However, it is more forceful connection. The spirit stays with the student forever, and they never separate. This is the esoteric meaning of the joining of the Nefesh of David with the Nefesh of Jonathan. The joining of the souls of David and Jonathan was also mentioned earlier in chapter 3, section 1, in a different context. It was based there on the verse from Samuel 1, chapter 18, verse 1. Here the connection to the verse is more general and less explicit. This is the reason that more respect is due to a teacher than to a father. There are many laws in regarding respect due to a teacher and to a father. The teacher referred to here is called a Rebbe Muvchak, which is defined as someone from whom the student has learned most of his wisdom. In our generation, it is very difficult to imagine the relationship between a student and a Rebbe Muvchak. In general, more respect is due to a teacher than to a father. For example, if a person's Rebbe Muvhak and father were both captured by pirates, and he only has money to redeem one of them, then the Rebbe Muvhak takes precedence. It is the same if he can only save the lost or stolen property of one of them. The Talmud provides a simple reason. One's father has given him life in this world, while one's teacher gives him eternal life in the world that is coming. However, there is an exception to the rule when the father is also a scholar, and all the more so if he is also the son's teacher or the teacher's teacher. What is the case if the teacher of the student is also his son? Then they are doubly bound together, because the same one is his teacher and his son. If there is less than 500 levels difference between them, then they are permanently bound together to each other. This is according to what was taught in this section previously. If there is a difference between them of 500 levels or less, they will permanently unite forever, and they will never separate. The two of them will become one root. The father is bound with the son because he, the son, is the teacher. And the son is bound with the father because he is his father. The two are bound to each other, this one to that one, and that one to this one, from both sides. In one respect, this one is higher, and in another respect, that one is higher. Nevertheless, they bind together, because one root become one root, and the lesser will be nullified and subsumed within the greater. My commentary. If you are not confused, there is something wrong with you, because the language that was used throughout this section was that of the Sirot. And at this level in development and the way I teach Kabbalah, you're not familiar with the terms on a level that you will ultimately need to be to understand the language of Sefirot. Please remember that these laws and regulations that apply to reincarnation do not follow logically all the time. Also remember that you are meant to reread the Sefer Shaarei Gilgulim a few times. This section is not meant to be understood the first time. You are not expected to understand this section right now. Maybe it will take 10 years to understand it. Maybe it will take a year. Maybe it will take a lifetime or 10. Ultimately, you will understand it. But don't beat yourself up or spend lots of hours trying to understand it right now. What is meant to be taken away from this section is the following. Children can come from the same soul root as the father or from any of the other 612 roots of Adam. Let's may use as an example that I come from the left heel of Adam, and I have brought two daughters into the world. One of my daughters has a good singing voice, a very special singing voice. That would mean or imply that she comes from the voice box of Chava. My other daughter comes from another level perhaps the wrist of Chava. A father can bring a child from his own level, in my case, the left heel of Adam, or he can bring a child from the other levels. Children need a garment to protect them from the higher lights that they may come into contact. This garment comes from the Father. This garment guides the child down the proper path. This is one of the reasons that the halakha is a Jewish woman needs to marry a Jewish man, and not a man from the other nations. If the man is from the other nations, that soul that becomes a garment can guide the child in another direction that is not Torah true. Sometimes the soul parts that form the garment return to the father, and other times they remain with the son. The criteria for this or from this is 500 levels difference. This 500 level difference has not been explained yet. Ultimately, all sparks will return to their original roots. Yet that may not occur until the ultimate return to the endless world. It is possible for the Father and the Son soul parts and sparks becoming united, so that a degree that they form from it, that the decree is that they form a new soul roots. A soul spark is equal to a soul, and at the same time is a part of a soul. There are many different components and sparks within the levels of soul. One calculation is each soul has 613 major limbs, and each limb can be composed of up to 600,000 minor sparks. This means that each soul level can have 367.8 million sparks. A spark is equal to a soul and is part of the soul. This is why the teaching of the critical mass concept, that Mashiach will come when the critical mass of humanity is reached. We cannot know what is the number of people that will reach critical mass. The reason being that each of the bodies in our generation is inhabited by sparks, and there can be up to 600,000 sparks, or a lower number, based on the minor roots. Now, this terminology of sparks and roots and souls will be discussed and be more easily understood in the next chapter. A teacher-student relationship is similar to a father-son and is also different. The teacher gives part of his soul when he teaches a student. These parts apply and follow the rules I have explained above. One major difference between teacher-student and father-son is the part shared by the teacher with the student will stay with the student until the world that is coming or the time of the Mashiach. This is why it is important to choose a teacher with wisdom. There's a famous verse in the Perkei Avot that one should buy his parent, but choose his teacher, which most people think and realize that it's very confusing, because you should choose your parents and buy your teacher, but the verbiage in Perkei Avot is the opposite. A teacher needs to be shown greater respect than a father is something we all need to try to live up to. The Arizal brings the situation of a son teaching his father and how that strengthens the interaction of the soul parts. When Kabbalah is taught academically, they spend an extensive amount of time with the vocabulary of the Sephirot, with the souls and the worlds. The commentator in this section brought that information into this commentary. It confuses those of us who are not taught that information, that vocabulary, until your Four Phases classes and the Tree of Life classes, which none of you have had all of those classes as of yet. Do not beat yourself up over this issue. You will learn this section again, and it will be more clear the next time around. I hope this summary has been helpful to you and for you. Are there any questions?
Yes.
I'm going to wait a minute for you to look through your notes, for you to determine if there's a question you wish to ask. Chapter 10, Section 2 is titled From Parents to Children. We will speak further about children born to fathers. Obviously, children are born to fathers and mothers, but the Arizal is specifying here the father only. The reason will become clear at the end of the section when he talks about Azazel. In some children, the dominating driving force comes from the father, and sometimes to an extreme degree. I will mention to you that in the story of Yom Kippur, when the ritual of Yom Kippur is described, there are two goats that are equal. And one is chosen by lot to represent the sins of the children of Israel. And one is chosen by lot to be sent to Azazel. This is the term, the person, the entity that is being described. When a man unites with his wife in intimacy, from the energy of the father there is drawn the son's surrounding light. Also, the aspect of internal light is drawn from the energy of the mother. My commentary. Please notice the additional term in intimacy. This is because everything relates to consciousness. The soul that is drawn from the consciousness of all the people around the couple at the moment of conception. If the act of procreation is done in public, all of the watcher's consciousness will impact which soul is drawn. If the act of procreation is in a petri dish, and that petri dish is being handled by a nurse, and then the nurse picks up the petri dish and walks it down the hallway and passes 15 people on the way, to the operating room where they are going to inject the contents of the petri dish into the womb of the woman. All of the consciousness of all of those people do impact the choice of soul of the child that is drawn in that procedure.
Wow.
Surrounding light is the potential that this child has received. Surrounding light is what this child has the potential to reveal throughout its lifetime. The internal light at birth is the life force necessary to remain alive. As one grows, the potential surrounding light becomes internal light. It was mentioned earlier that all things consist of two aspects, light and vessel. These two also consist of two aspects each. There is the internal part of a vessel and the external part. Similarly, there are two aspects of light. They are the internal light and the surrounding light. The internal light is the aspect of light that enters into the vessel. It is contained within the vessel under pressure, because it cannot easily expand outward. The surrounding light, on the other hand, does not enter into the vessel, but hovers around it. It is much less concentrated because it is not contained within the limited space of the vessel. Although it is always connected and associated with the vessel and always shines upon it. A fragment of light, and I'm using the word fragment because there's really, it's not the language of branches. But I want to give you an example. A fragment of light. It becomes surrounding light for a person. For a person in this year. For a person in this situation. That fragment of life that has become surrounding light for this person, that light can be revealed into the wrong vessel, another person, but it will not stay there. And this is the same idea of someone who has a wonderful idea to start a business. And he does so. And then 6 months later, the business fails. Or 5 years later, the business fails. And someone else takes that idea and is successful in that business for his whole life. This is the idea of surrounding light being revealed in the proper vessel. The internal light is the aspect of light that enters into the vessel. It is contained within the vessel under pressure because it cannot easily expand outward. The surrounding light, on the other hand, does not enter into the vessel, but hovers around it. It is much less concentrated because it is not contained within the limited space of the vessel. Although it is always connected and associated with the vessel and always shines upon it. The amount of light that enters into the vessel is always much more limited than the surrounding light. Also, the amount of light that enters into the vessel is always much more limited than the surrounding light, which is not forced into a limited space. Therefore, the surrounding light is considered greater and of a higher quality than the internal light. That is why it is the surrounding light that brings about miracles, whereas normal, everyday affairs are in the province of the internal light. The process of transmission from parent to son is the same irrespective of whether it is surrounding light or internal light. The light is clothed within the The light is clothed within the Netzach, Hod, and Yesod of the soul of the parent, as was taught in the previous section. Now, since the surrounding light is greater, is associated with the Sefirah of the right side, which is also the higher one, called Chachma and Abba. Correspondingly, the internal light is associated with Bina, called Ima. Now, at the time of their unification, it is possible that both parents will concentrate upon the mitzvah and holiness. The mitzvah is the mitzvah to procreate, to being fruitful and multiplying. The mitzvah is what we have been commanded. And God said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it. The intimacy that derives from the long-term relationship of husband and wife is also considered by many to be part of the completion of the mitzvah. The characteristics and qualities of the children depend upon the thoughts and behavior of the parents at the time of conception. The mitzvah should be done in purity and holiness, and in that way it increases the holiness of husband and wife. And it increases holiness throughout the world. This is a very important subject in the Kabbalah. But this is not the place to even begin the subject. In addition to the laws of family purity that must be known, the reader may also refer to the Shulchan Aruch concerning the set and setting of the mitzvah and to the important Kabbalistic book from the Ramban called Dat Kedusha. Now the Arizal is adding here a well-known Kabbalistic rule that when the mitzvah is performed with purity and holiness and proper thoughts, then it also increases the holiness of the offspring. Another important associated Kabbalistic rule is that the characteristics and qualities of the children depend upon the thoughts and behavior of the parents at the time of conception. Alternatively, the concentration of both of them may not be for the sake of the mitzvah, but for their own pleasure, which is considered evil. Marital intimacy without pleasure is just as bad as when the partners are only thinking about satisfying their own physical desire for stimulation and pleasure. Indeed, children born from intercourse where there was no pleasure are likely to be damaged physically or mentally. On the other hand, the desire of the partners have for each other is a positive factor in the determination of the child's level of intelligence. Mm-hmm. However, when their thoughts and concentration are only on physical pleasures, then the quality of the unification plummets downward towards zero. In addition, such people are likely to do other things that are wrong. In the preparation for their meeting, in the setting of the intimacy, and in the human dynamics of their relationship. Thus, their unification can actually eventually take place in the realm of evil, God forbid. When that happens, they give birth to devils. Alternatively, the concentration of the father might be for good, whereas that of the mother is bad, or vice versa. If both of them are thinking about the holiness of the mitzvah, then the child will be a perfect tzaddik in surrounding light, and a perfect tzaddik in internal light. If the intentions of both of them were for evil purposes, then the child will be completely evil in surrounding life and in internal life. If the father's intentions were for good, but that of the mother was bad, then the surrounding light of the child will be righteous, but the internal light will be wicked. With the passage of time, the surrounding light will overcome the internal light, and he will grow to be completely righteous. This is because the surrounding light includes the internal light, and it, the surrounding light, will overturn it to purify it. The surrounding light includes the internal light because they were originally like one light. Some of the original light entered into the vessel, but most of it remained outside. Thus, the light that is inside the vessel was once included within the greater light that remained outside. There are some children who are very sharp, and they cannot stay still, whereas some children are lazy and move more heavily. Since the surrounding light is greater than the internal light, the former will conquer the latter and change it entirely, if necessary, into something good. The quality of the two lights in turn will influence the child's character and behavior, and even many of the things that will happen to him throughout his life. If the father's intentions are for evil, and the mothers are for good, then the surrounding light will be evil and the internal light good. However, after a time, the surrounding light that is bad will overcome the good internal light, and it will also become bad. Nevertheless, it seems from the following words of the Arizal that the situation is not clear-cut, black and white. There are degrees. There are other factors. There is a debate in our modern world of nature versus nurture. That's what's being discussed here. If you want to know if the power of the father or the power of the mother will dominate, then you can recognize it by the lightness or the heaviness of the child. It is not clear-cut that the power of the father always dominates. There are other factors that alter the determination. It is possible for the power of the mother to sometimes dominate. These other factors, however, are not the subject of the Arizal here. Rather, he wants to describe now how it can be known if the light coming from the father will dominate or vice versa, and the consequences upon the child. The internal light is limited and is not dynamic, but the surrounding light moves around outside and propels a person to the places that it wants. Consequently, if you see a person who is light, like an eagle, and runs like a deer, in all his activities and quick in all his work, it is because the surrounding light that comes from the energy of the father dominates over him. Yehuda ben Taima said, "Be bold like a panther, light like an eagle, swift as a deer, and strong like a lion, to do the will of your Father who is in heaven." On the other hand, if you see someone who is lazy and moves heavily, it teaches that it is the internal light from the side of the mother that is dominant. Now everything goes according to their deeds, by which I mean that if the father's intention at the time of intercourse was for the mitzvah, then this child will be quick to do the work of heaven, and he will be very great in Torah. However, if his father's intentions were only for his own enjoyment, then he will be quick in the tasks of the world. The opposite is also true. If he is slow-moving when his mother's intentions was for the mitzvah, then he will be lazy to do the work of this world. However, if her concentration was not upon the mitzvah, then the son will be lazy in the work of heaven. Having said this, it is possible to understand why there are some children who are very sharp and they cannot stay still, whereas some children are lazy and move more heavily. The children of the first group are those heavily influenced by the surrounding light. The second are those influenced by the internal light. High magnitudes of surrounding light can produce a power capable of overriding natural law. This is the reason that Azazel, the brother of Yoav, was unfathomably light upon his feet. The story of Azazel, the brother of Yoav, is told in chapter 2 of Samuel Bet. The sages said he could run over the stalks of grass without bending them. In other words, he ran so swiftly that his weight never came to rest upon the surface. Before it could rest, he was already gone from there. It seems to us that the sages are speaking here metaphorically. However, the Arizal is insisting that we take their words literally. Definitely a midrash of the sages cannot digress from its simple meaning. However, with what was mentioned here, it is understandable. The energy of his father was over-dominating, and there was no maternal energy within him at all. The surrounding light was totally augmented within him, and he was almost able to fly through the air. It seems to me that the point of the Arizal here is to teach that high magnitudes of surrounding light, combined with proper intentions and thought patterns at the time of conception, can produce a power capable of overriding natural law and provide an instrument for wondrous miracles. This is the end of chapter 10. My commentary. This section is very clear, and it's important for people to know as to the characteristics of their children will have. Most people who do not study Kabbalah hear about this teaching and laugh at it. The true reality of consciousness is the unity of the couple. Maybe they are not thinking of the mitzvah, but giving pleasure to their partner. This unity also impacts the soul that is being drawn. Spiritual people do not necessarily have spiritual children. In the Kabbalah Center, where I initially learned this material, and while I was not married at the time I was studying there, I do know that many of the people who studied there were given the information that I just read you and were given meditations to do when drawing children. And they therefore drew higher level souls based on the principles of reincarnation. And you could observe the way the children interacted to know the truth of what is written here. But as I always tell you, never believe a word of what I say. experience it for yourself. Are there any questions? I'm inviting you all and strongly recommended that you all join us tomorrow, either at noon or at 6 p.m. There is a new basic class. You're invited to take that basic class over again. As I stress, it's beneficial to learn that way. Thursday night at 9 p.m., it's very important to make the Rosh Chodesh Cheshvan connection with us. Saturday night at 10 p.m., the first opportunity connecting with the spiritual energy of Cheshvan. The spiritual energy of the week. 10:30 Sunday morning is an opportunity to learn about science and Torah. Monday there will be three classes, one at 11 a.m., which is the Sefer Yetzirah class. Another is the basic class from Sacramento, where we will be teaching relativity, a subject that is very important to learn and implement in your life, a subject that's very important in growing into the level of mind over matter. And at 8:30, we will have the class in Esther Sefirot. Any questions before I wish you all a good Shabbat, a good week,
and a beautiful Rosh Chodesh?
Go ahead.
In the part where you were talking about the teacher and the student and the teacher,
yes,
that just refers to a male teacher.
Not in our generation, it refers to both.
And does it just refer to a teacher who's just teaching Torah or Kabbalah, the spiritual matter?
No. It's using as an example teaching Torah and spiritual matters. But there's great responsibility in teachers on any level, of whatever they are teaching. They're going to share part of their soul with their students.
That's what I wanted to know, because it has direct application, and I know somebody else in the class is a teacher as well. I'm a teacher, and somebody else in the class is a teacher as well, so that's why I wanted to know.
I know. That's why I answered you.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Everybody have a beautiful month, beautiful Rosh Chodesh Cheshvan, and a beautiful week.
Thank you. You too.
Shalom, you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.